Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Shank, and I am the host of the show. Sheila Odette joins me tonight to discuss her take on the affairs of the world as seen through the eye of astrology. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Sheila Odette. Hello,
hi.
Dear Sheila.
Hello, dear Kate.
How are you this evening?
I'm okay this evening. It's been quite an extraordinary week. I just spoke with someone that I work with who was drove into the city for 9/11, and she said as you approached the tunnel, you got chills all over your body. It was just like it was like a place of just a holy, sacred space of worship. And I said it had to be because there were like 3,000 angels that were top of that city, you know, celebrating.
Absolutely.
And so I was very interested in watching the children and then watching the picture of the elderly man that they had on the front of the New York Post and on the front of the papers. Of this elderly man who was over top, he was laying over top, touching his son's name, which was quite beautiful. It was quite beautiful. And, you know, I was just thinking maybe we can move on now. But, you know, it doesn't seem like that's what we're choosing to do. It seems like the focus is on war, and now there are more people dead, you know, than were killed in the buildings through these wars. And we talk about money in this country that we don't have any, but look at the money that we're spending for these wars. And then we have these boys, these wonderful boys that come back that need rehab and need, if they're not physically maimed, they're emotionally maimed. And so that's more, you know, trillions of dollars. So, you know, you know, you just wonder $600 to $900 billion just in the medical bills of what we're doing. And you wonder, what is that about? I mean, what is that about?
Yeah. A lot of the people who lost family members in 9/11 are doing remarkable things. They're going to Afghanistan and meeting with the people there. I saw a beautiful woman whose brother was lost in the in the Twin Towers, and how she reached out and has changed her whole life.
Well, the great story that I heard was that somebody was, the man was coming down from the inside the tower, and he then got out, and he was across the river, and he was meditating on what he saw or felt. And he said, and if this phone goes out, I will call you back on the other phone because I had a friend die and she's fooling around with the phone, okay? So I think she's in this conversation and I think she just left us know it because she said she would be, okay?
Well, she always enjoyed this show and always said stuff in the background. And actually, she was on it quite, you know, she'd get on the phone and say a few things. So we're referring to the Reverend Joanne Glass, everybody, and we love her very much. And she is a bridge to the other side because she's telling us there is no other side. Okay, go ahead.
Well, the funny thing was is I kind of got a message for her because she always did a life and death seed ceremony. So for her funeral, she was the one that did the funeral over the loudspeaker, and she did this that the seeds, you know, that their life and death are the same. That's what it was about. She did the same ceremony on New Year's for 28 years, and that she gave everybody seeds to be grown. And I thought, you know, to go out and grow these seeds. And so I got kind of a message from her, and I think it was from her. And, I think, is it my imagination or is it her? And then I get all kinds of signals that it is. And she said she's doing the service every day there on 9/11. And that she
has
a huge audience. And the only thing is that it's backwards. That the
backwards.
The angels are crying because they're losing one. When we're here, we cry because we're losing one of ours. But now the angels are crying because they're losing one of theirs. So she said she was doing the ceremony backwards, which I thought was quite amusing, you know. And I didn't think that was my imagination. I think that was real.
Oh, well, that came out of a very, very beautiful, you know, creative space. It's very creative, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's very creative, and there is nothing without imagination. Everything is imagined. This whole world is imagined. I think that the universe imagined itself, and here we are. And everything lives and transforms and goes into another form and then, you know, comes back or doesn't come back, whatever. So
Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to, on this program, because we're talking somewhat about life and death, I was going to refer to Amy Winehouse, because I think that Amy Winehouse was a critical prophet in this time and age, as I think that Kurt Cobain and James Morrison and Janis Joplin and... who's the guitar player, the famous one, the other one that died at 27? Anyway, I can't pull it, but they all died at 27. I mean, they all died.
That's interesting.
They all died in a lunar return. And a lunar return is between 27 and 30, and then your Saturn return comes. So you either decide to be reborn again into the middle of your life, or you decide not to.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these great prophets, I think, they did their job and they decided not to. It's also interesting that they're mostly mutable. I mean, Amy Winehouse was a Virgo. Michael Jackson was a Virgo. Kurt Cobain was a Pisces, you know. So we're talking about the mutability of both sides, the hero and the victim. Like Pisces is... the one side of Pisces, it's two half moons with dots with dots on each side. So you decide whether you're going to perceive something as a hero or as a victim. It's
mm-hmm.
all perception of reality. So basically, Jesus was thought to be a Pisces. At least that's the MO. Okay, but we still, you know, we celebrate his birthday at Christmas, which is Capricorn.
right.
So it all comes out of the pagan thing of celebration. You know, everybody that knows about that. But the point was that I was making here was that Jesus never talked of himself as a victim. Only the church and religion talks about him as a victim.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about himself as a hero. And the hero was, you know, if I can heal, you have to believe in yourself to be healed. You have to heal your wound from inside out. It's like the picture of Jesus, the famous picture knocking on the door. I can't
yeah.
heal you unless you accept that you can be healed and that you are a healer. And the other side of that, the victim side of that, is that I suffered and died for you and did all, you know, the whole MO around that. But what I think he, for me, what he really said on the cross was, forgive them, they just didn't get this. But maybe 2,000 years later they will. But they haven't. I mean, heroically,
yeah.
he would stand up, and this country would stand up and say, we're standing up for peace now. We're standing up in some way, we are going, but we are in this whole form of betrayal. You know, that we were totally betrayed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when you look at betrayal, it's a really interesting thing, because you know the one thing, and I don't know if is I want to know if you can disappoint another to be true to yourself, if you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul. That is in the invitation that Arai Mountain Dreamer wrote. And if you can be faithless and therefore be trustworthy. People went up in arms because they said she should have written faithful there, but she didn't. She wrote faithless.
Oh.
It means how long can you stay in some kind of deal? And, I mean, it's interesting because all day I've had these phone calls from people in this situation over and over, you know, again, about betrayal. One's betrayed, the other one's betrayed, the other one, you know, all of this. But, you know, you make a deal to get married, right? Or you make a deal to be in a business relationship. And then things happen. Things happen. One person, you know, goes out and goes with somebody else, or something happens, or you just fall out of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you're faithless. But that does not mean you can't go on with your life. Because sometimes, you know, to stay into something, you have to betray your own soul.
Hmm.
And you can't, and if you betray your own soul, it's like somebody says, you said till death do us part, but this person has a critical disease like Alzheimer's or something, and they have to go into a facility, and the other person can't care for them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just being true to your own soul. It's just being true to who you are. It means every single time after you make a deal, life changes. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes you learn all you need to learn from that relationship. And then
right.
you need to move on. But if you live in a history lesson of, oh, you did this, you did that, you did this, this is 1,000 betrayals, right? And it's a wounding of the soul. But you're bringing that into the moment, which means you're creating your future.
Mm-hmm.
You're creating your future. And therefore, you know, I've been really contemplating all that today, you know. You can say
mm-hmm.
when someone dies that they betrayed you. But they didn't betray you. They just changed in form. They're still with
mm-hmm.
you. And if anything, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Somebody said that to me today, by the way. but the day's been strange because I went to the bookstore. I wanted to exchange a book. I didn't have the slip to exchange the book, right? Long story short, she said, you can't exchange the book because you don't have the slip. I got mad. I didn't get mad at the girl. I was okay. I just said, it's a dumb policy, and walked out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Joanne is flipping on his phone. Can you hear her? Anyway,
yeah,
I got outside.
Also, Ulysses is completely animated.
Okay. I walked outside.
Ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I walked outside,
go ahead.
Got in my car, and zipped around the corner. And not small, but huge on the back of this car was written, watch your focus.
No, really?
I mean, not in the small kind of thing that you put in the bumper. It was in black masking tape written on the trunk of the car.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my, that was, you know, Reverend Joanne saying, just watch your focus here, you know, because
mm-hmm.
the woman mm-hmm. can't help it. It's just policy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, Amy Winehouse was a Virgo, and I, you know, there is a big thing among astrologers, whether she was a Capricorn moon or a Sagittarius.
Mm-hmm.
The exact time of birth. It was the end of Sagittarius to the beginning of Capricorn. I tend to think that she was a Capricorn moon. I don't know why, because I think it's the ancient, she was dealing with the ancient brain of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
She was dealing with bringing it into form and bringing it up so that people would look at it, you know. When you see a Uranus-Jupiter conjunction in Sagittarius, though, that person almost chooses the time to go out. That person
mm-hmm.
almost, I mean, it's like an instant kind of thing. And, of course, she had Saturn in Scorpio. And Saturn in Scorpio, of course, is about working with, you know, the responsibility of the death process in some ways of
oh.
dealing with that. You know, if you want a great surgeon, you look for Saturn in Scorpio.
Oh, Really?
You know, their Sun in Scorpio, Saturn in Scorpio, you know they're going to stay there, they're going to find it, and they're going to go deep.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the endurance to figure it out. So she also had Mercury in Virgo conjunct the Sun. Now, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally, I always was very interested in, with the glyph turning in, I was really interested in the fact that the rehab song, you know, they told me to go to rehab, and I said, no, no, no. And I think the message in that song is that if you fail at rehab, it doesn't mean you fail totally with the disease. There's other ways to go.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing was that people took that song to their soul. That song went to the center place of it won, the Grammy, it won everything. She couldn't even come to this country, you know, because of the addiction thing, to accept the Grammy. Did you know that?
No, uh-uh.
And then she has Venus, Mars, and Leo, which means she picked violent relationships, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw it right now. I would say this because it's really important to Amy, and so kind of to her memory, I thought I would do this. A Zen master, when asked where he would go after he died, replied, "To hell, of course, for that is where help is needed most."
Wonderful.
Yes. And so, number one, who would choose a disease where there's no compassion? Number two, who would choose a disease where you're completely isolated? Number three, who would choose a disease that when you're in the height of a career, it would destroy it, you and everyone around you? Number four, who would choose a disease that would turn your own parents and family against you? Number five, who would choose a disease where there is absolutely no cure? Number six, who would choose a disease where meditation's the enemy? Medications are the enemy. Sorry, there was a slip there. Number seven, who would choose a disease that the only way out is humility, love, and connecting to your inner self?
Hmm.
Number eight, who would choose a disease that leaves you open to ridicule every time you relapse? We don't do that to cancer patients.
No.
I would tell you who would choose it, the highest spiritual teachers that we have in this universe. We have compassion for heart disease, cancer, and HIV. But for some reason, these Zen masters have come to teach us the highest form of forgiveness, love, compassion, and spirituality. How to love without judgment. How to get out of our own expectations of what they should do. The first time that an addict uses, they're not doing it to feel bad, they're doing it to feel good. Almost everyone that has ever experienced addiction or has known a person who is addicted, there is no one on this earth, Kate, and you know, that has not dealt with some form of addiction. This
right.
planet is an addictive planet. Basically, what I'm saying is that addiction is here to speak, to break open our hearts at a very deep level. It is hard to have an addiction when the end result mostly is death, prison, lifelong pain, and isolation. So I'm inviting everybody in the name of Amy Winehouse and all these others to open their heart to someone they know with an addictive personality today. And I know that you've done that, Kate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one major disease in America. It's eating our country from the inside out. And so we must start looking at this with the same compassion we have for heart patients, cancer patients, diabetic patients. We're never going to solve it without compassion and love, and non-judgment. So Gary Zukav said, addiction is the highest form of spirituality. It's not what you achieve in this life that makes you great. It's what you overcome.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've looked at many people's charts, many addictive people, Anna Nicole Smith, Michael Jackson, Tiger Woods, Patrick Swayze, John Edwards. They all have these charts of really hard charts, but they're like Zen masters. After all, why would a Zen master want to come here if they're not going to have a hard thing?
Right.
So that was my thing about Amy Winehouse. And that is my little tribute to her.
You know, one time I wrote in one of the prayers about the fact that addiction is the highest form of spirituality. And boy, I got a lot of black for that. I don't think people want to believe that that's true, but I've always felt that it was.
And why did you feel that it was?
Well, because it is.
Because of all those things that I said, all those 8 things,
yes,
really.
Absolutely, yeah. Because it does make it makes people. It's like I was just thinking about this the other day about how the only thing we can do for any situation in our lives is to bring love and compassion into it, because then our lives will flow a lot smoother than it would if we're sitting in judgment about anything.
Well, really. There's either win-win, win-lose, or lose-lose. So you can, it's as simple if you want to break it down to that. Win-win is compassion, love, no comparison, saying I'm as responsible for this as the other person, the ability to respond with love and compassion for self, and saying, you know, I created this, and I created it, and how am I going to survive it, or am I going to be a victim here or stand up and be a hero? There are those choices. Amy Winehouse, and I believe her father, had gone off hard drugs for almost 2 years. Now, the thing about alcohol is, you cannot really go off of alcohol. It's worse going off alcohol without medical help than any of the other ones.
Right.
Alcohol, when you go off of alcohol, what's the word I'm hunting for? When you go dry. It can kill you. And that's
yes,
what they
can.
Said killed her.
Well, I think she had a seizure. She had seizure,
an alcoholic seizure. And that was really something. Now they brought up her singing with Tony Bennett. Now, can you ever imagine Amy Winehouse singing with Tony Bennett? Oh my gosh.
Beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, the voice just sent shivers down your spine that she had that jazz voice that was just it was like a musical instrument. It was it was just that incredible, incredible voice that went deep, deep into your heart, you know?
Right.
Yes. So the other thing that I was going to talk about that was in the news over the weekend was the U.S. Open. And I was very interested in the fact that people don't know this, but finally for the championship, Rafael Nadal was playing Novak Djokovic. Now, Rafael Nadal, who is my boy, had the greatest year ever last year. Okay, he won Wimbledon, he won, you know, he has this great year. Now, he was 59 and 7 or something, and Novak this year is 60 and 2. That means 60 wins, 2 losses. Now, the interesting thing about all that is that most tennis players are Geminis, great ones. I mean, I've done this whole thing. The interesting thing about these two boys is one was born on May the 22nd and one was born on June the 3rd. What does that mean? That means that these boys are an exact mirror of each other. Unbelievable. Their charts mirror each other. You couldn't even look. They have the same ascendants. They have the same in heavens. They have the sun. Both of them have the sun in Gemini. Both of them have the moon moon in Aries. Now, Djokovic, of course, you say his moon, if it's an exact time, could be 29 degrees of Pisces, but it's not an exact time. So I'm thinking it's in Aries, too. So you're facing yourself across the net. That's what happened on Monday because they were rained out. They had to play Monday. And I'm like, my God, you just could see I could actually see those Gemini minds working. You know, in a split second, you have to listen. You have to think of a shot to do that the other guy's going to miss. They did this one thing where they hit it over the net. The other one hit it back from off the court and got it on the court. The other one drop shot it across the net, and the other one got it, which he just dropped. And so it was like. And then when one of them would not get it or something, they'd walk back and they would have this puzzled look on their face. It was like they were playing each other. I was like, my God, this would be like a high test that you would have with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up that Djokovic won the first 2 sets and then Nadal won the 3rd set. And then Djokovic came back in the 4th and he won because it was his time. But, you know, Nadal then was, he was in the interview room, and he almost said, you know, it was like playing myself. He almost said that. And so I thought that was quite interesting. And both of them have these loving families around them. I mean, Djokovic has his mother and his father around him. I think that Rafael Nadal's parents got divorced last year. He lives in Mallorca. They all live in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was really hard on him, the split up of the family. But his uncle Tony is the one that trains him. So it's an entire family endeavor. It's almost like a second father. So with compassion and love, both of these boys have been brought up in their field of endeavor, just like Tiger Woods.
Right.
But I think that both of these boys, I don't think it was like Andre Agassi and all that they were forced to play tennis. I think it was something, a passion that came from the inside out. Because actually Nadal's brother and all them, they play soccer in Spain. That's what's big, you know. And, you know, Djokovic he comes from Serbia. Now, who thinks to play tennis in Serbia?
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I mean, this is like unbelievable for that country. It's almost like the little Chinese girl winning, you know, the Wimbledon, right, or whatever she won.
Right.
So not only, you know, this is the highest level of manifestation. It's the highest level, you know, it's like the Olympics. It's like, and I think that the whole world is in the Olympics now. Because when the Olympics come together, the Olympics is like everybody's a winner. They all come there as winners. And so they have to live their game above winning. And everybody comes together in this sports facility with love and compassion and, of course, drive to win. But when you see at the end of the Olympics, they march in as countries separate. But the most beautiful thing at the end is in the last ceremony, all the countries are mixed up. All the countries are, and that's Aquarian. That means they come together on the highest level. Did you ever hear the story of that concentration camp where they couldn't have the Olympics? So for 2 weeks, one of the guards and all, and got together with somebody in the camp and decided to have the Olympics. That was a documentary. It was gorgeous. And for 2 weeks, everybody was everybody else's friend.
Oh, that's beautiful, yeah.
And the camp was never the same. The camp was never the same because they had come together on this higher level of achievement, this pushing oneself further than you think oneself can go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm not letting you talk, Kate.
You don't have to. What is that? Wow.
That's my other phone. That's my other phone. Somebody's calling me, but I'm not answering it.
Well,
I see I have my other phone laying here in case his phone goes out. Okay. Go.
I was just going to say you have a new website, www.SheilaAudet, that's SheilaAudet.com. I put it in the chat room. So
good.
It's a work in progress, we'll say, because there's more to be done on it.
Yes. There's more to be done on it. I'm more of an intuitive and not quite a computer person, but my friend and business partner was a computer person, and now I'm becoming a computer person. So I'm beginning to have some passion around it.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Well, I'm not doing perfectly. There's a long way to go, but after all, isn't that what life's about?
Yeah, it is definitely a learning experience. It is a university.
It is the university, yes. And it was interesting because my friend who died is coming because I put her ashes in I don't know if everybody knows about the grotto. Where is it? It's outside Fredericksburg, right?
Emmitsburg. Emmitsburg, Maryland, yep.
And so we spread her ashes there.
Why don't we go back very soon?
Yes, we'll go back. But because she was a healer and because she worked in healing and love and everything, all of the children and I, we spread her ashes there. Well, I put her ashes in water right there where the Holy Mother is, and she's been flooding the house. Well,
oh,
not,
my gosh.
Not flooding, but, you know, I went in and walked in the living room, and my water bottle broke all over my feet. Now, but this morning, I walked away from the sink for a moment to go into the other room, and I came back, and the sink was overflowing in a moment.
Oh, oh my gosh.
And I went, okay, cut it out. I got the message. Just cut, you know, it's like really, really interesting. So anyway, what do you have to say, Kate?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see.
Full moon in Pisces. The Pisces must have something to say.
Oh, beautiful. That was beautiful. That was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And Ulysses and I are both Pisces, and we were just hanging out watching the moon all night. It was just beautiful.
Yes. It almost reflected itself out the window. I could see it double.
Uh-huh.
It was like a really interesting thing, the way I was looking out this window, and it looked like there was a shadow of it. And it was just gorgeous. And
oh, my gosh. And there was a beautiful planet, not really, really close, but somewhat close, that was sort of following it across the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh, it was beautiful. Now, as a Pisces, and Ulysses and I, do you feel... Or as any sign at all, when the moon becomes full and is in your sign, what can you tell us about that?
Okay, the moon is your emotional life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when let's begin by telling that the sun is the God seed. So the holy circle, the seed is hidden in the middle of it. It's the whole story about where would you hide your soul and hide it in your heart, because they'll never find it there unless they really search, okay?
Yeah.
So that's what the sun is, and that's what the dot in the middle. And so when you have an astrological chart, it's your guide to how to get into your heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's your guide in. Now, if you cut a sliver from that and drop it down, you get like a cradle or a half moon, which looks like a cradle.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the emotional environment that you put around you to reflect what you're working on. So that's how you create your perception of reality. So you put people around you, and if people around you are screaming and yelling and doing all that, you go, what is going on with me, instead of what is going on with them?
You say,
oh my gosh, how am I creating this? And then you go to work on yourself. And when you go to work on yourself, then it changes. So a new moon, and as I said with Amy Winehouse, when you're 27, the moon comes around to its original position. 27 to 20, in between 20, 27 to 30, okay? And then you have a Saturn return. So that's a re-baptism. I call the moon the baptismal place, okay? It's a baptismal place. So a new moon, when you're starting a new project, right, is the beginning of something new. And you go, okay, I'm starting this and everything, and the moon in Pisces goes, I'm in a place here that I'm looking at whether I'm going to be a hero or a victim in this. Let's just put that metaphor out there. And somebody is doing something that I'm not really pleased with, so how am I going to approach that? So what happens is, watch your focus, like on the bumper today. So you're focusing on that person, and by the time it gets to a full moon, it gets totally blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are in the second act, okay? So you go, this is not going away. There was something I'm not looking at. Is this true? Is this really true? How do I feel when I'm thinking about this person? How am I reacting to them? And they're a gift. They're a God-given gift. But a full moon in Pisces means you are really at the apex. You're at the middle of something that's really working on you. And then you have that it goes down, okay, that it gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And if you work the process right, then you've gone through an entire process, an entire workshop, but you have to work it.
Yeah.
Now, as when you're working yourself all the time, each time it gets less. Because you have tools then. You go, okay, I'm going to do gratitude. What am I grateful for? And then you look around and you start, and you're when you do gratitude work, you're lifting your vibration from pain and guilt and fear and anger. You're lifting that vibration up to compassion and joy. And well, I'm just simply grateful that I can get out of bed today. I'm just simply grateful that I have food in front of me. I'm grateful that the picture's there. You just do the grateful thing till you raise your vibration. Up to a higher vibration. And then the meditation skill, just breathing in and out. So when you begin to have tools to use, you know, I've been using a lot of tools because the grief process, you know, deepens you. When you lose someone, it takes you to parts of yourself, you know, that you don't work on usually. It works on the dark side, like the anger, the pain, the abandonment, the terror, of course, the loneliness. If you've worked on loneliness before, you know aloneness is different than loneliness. Mm-hmm. Aloneness means I'm alone, but I'm not alone. I have myself and I'm working. And, you know, those are the aspects of the sacred wound. And that wound is something we don't work on in our daily lives. It forces us to look at parts of ourselves that are not yet healed. And if you can look at that as a teaching, you'll grow. So the pain of grief is not the only teacher in life, but, man, when you're going through it and you're aware of it, it's the greatest teacher of all. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I'll never forget the time I had a patient who had a very tragic loss of her baby. And I went back a day or two later to see her, and she had the baby in her room for a few days. I stood respectfully there and with the baby, and she looked at me and she says, you know, I would never have do this in any other way than the way it happened over the last few days because of what I learned, how much I feel, you know, how much joy and the sorrow and the grief. It's all something. I'll never forget that moment as long as I live, because she felt that she... It was sort of ordained for her.
And, you know, what you just said is what Joanne's granddaughter said, almost exactly the words about the death process.
Yes.
She sat and she held her grandmother and she rubbed her back and she said exactly what you just said. And she's 20. And I was like, and then she stood up and said it in the circle. When in front of all those people, and I was so pleased that that child got it. I mean, she got it.
She did.
And the seeds of wisdom, you know, the wounds of the grief. What is lost can only come back again in higher ways if you let it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why 9/11 should be looked at that way.
Right.
9/11 should be looked at not as this pain and agony anymore, but it's the fact that 3,000 angels 3,000 angels are with us now at all given times and looking after us, and that they came in to do that. That's hard to understand why people come in to be drug addicts, why people come in to be alcoholics. Well, it's to teach us compassion, because right after the tragedy, people were so compassionate, so loving, so wonderful.
Yeah.
They went to a place that was real, that's really us. They went to the vortex of their heart, which is love.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly all of those firefighters and everything that were on television said they would not have done anything differently, even knowing that they have inhaled all that stuff and are ill. They still said they would have done the same thing.
Right.
And so, but if the grief hardens us, and the grief does that kind of thing to us, and has taken us to this war place, then it's lowering the vibration and not lifting it. And so I think that the memorial on 9/11 over there lifted the vibration. I felt a lifting. I watched some of it. I felt a lifting. And there is always power in saying people's names.
Yes,
it always amazes me, the power of a name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I showed you the woman in Harlem that's working with the children in the children that can't have singing, and she brings them in and they sing. They're in this. I thought I showed that to you. They're in this spiritual. She brings them in and they do rock. They do rock singing and they do. I mean, they're marvelous. But the thing that she process that she has them do is saying their name out loud. And this one child would go and she says, "No, I can't hear you." And the next one would go. They would sing, but they were unable to speak their name. And so she kept that up and kept that up. By the end of the summer months, one of the things when they performed was to speak their names. And they and each one of them, even the one that would, couldn't even say her name at all, yelled it as loud as they could. It almost shook the ceiling. And that was just... that was just such a powerfully beautiful thing for me to watch. What this woman, how this woman gave their souls back to them, gave their passion back to them. And some of those children, their parents didn't even come to hear them sing, which is unbelievable. They didn't even come to hear this beautiful gift. And I mean, these kids could sing. I mean, sing.
Oh, this was the 60 Minutes thing, right? Yeah, I remember
now. You do.
Yeah.
I thought I showed it to you.
That was pretty cool.
But
yeah.
Well, that's a gift, you know. That's really really a gift that woman has. She's a major prophet, and there's a lot of them out there, you know.
She was just full of total love, wasn't she? The woman who led the whole group, she was just wonderful.
I always have a saying of Martha Graham that I keep with me, and it's, you know, from the old days. But, you know, she said, "I'm a dancer. I believe that we learn by practice, whether it means to learn to dance by practicing dancing or to learn to live by practicing living. The principles are exactly the same. And each is the performance of a dedicated, precise set of acts, physically, emotionally, and intellectually, from which comes shape of achievement, a sense of one's being, a satisfaction of spirit. One becomes, in some area, an athlete of God." I think that is...
oh, my gosh, that's cool.
That's one of the most... I went by that for a long time. So it's how you practice meditation. It's how you practice grief. It's how you practice your vibration. It's the vibrational energy, you know, like that bumper sticker today that said, "Watch your focus."
Yeah, that's so cool. Really.
Because if you focus on the pain, the agony, and the hurt... that's exactly what you're going to get back.
Mm-hmm.
If you focus on Joanne and I, 28 years we worked together, 28 years, you think how many people have 28 years, right?
Yeah.
So you take what you've had and you go on for the other person.
And you were talking about reframing.
Yes. Yes.
That's true.
Well, reframing is you tell it, you feel all the feelings, you write it down, you feel all the feelings, you tell the story, you become even a victim of the story, and then you collapse the energy, and you take the energy away from that story, and you reframe it into what you've learned, you take it to the spiritual place. What did I learn? How did I become stronger? How did I become a hero through this? How did I become all those things? And then you integrate that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what reframing is. Reframing is a neurolinguistic term. But it's, you know, you can reframe any day by getting out of bed with gratitude.
That's right. Absolutely.
You can reframe. And the new one that I'm doing that I told you about is a creation box. You take a box.
Yes.
It can be a physical box, or it could just be an imaginary box. And you put into that box what you want. What you want for the day, what you want for whatever, what you want. Well, I did this the other morning. My printer broke, and I said, oh, my gosh, I don't have a printer. I don't know what to do. I can't afford another printer at this given moment. And within a half hour, I was talking to my hairdresser, and she said, guess what? I have an extra printer, brand new, in the box. I went, that creation box really works. You know what I mean? Well, it does.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
So, and I mean, you can put, you know, love in the creation box. You can put, I want a joyful emotion today. I want somebody to love that to call me, or I will call them. You know, anything, anything that lifts your vibration. Because the thing is to live. You know, we enjoy being a victim because the victim is drama. And it's interesting, me going through this process, everybody expects you to be the victim.
Yeah.
There's an expectation of sorrow and victimization. So if you say, oh, no, I'm really joyful today, they go, what? How can you be joyful? It's not what you're supposed to be.
Right. It's
you're
just
supposed
really
to be
sad, in my opinion. And the brainwashing of the world, isn't it? My gosh.
Well, we go by these sayings, you know, that, you know, the saying is that basically grief lasts for this period of time. And then if you have some kind of a down day, which I did yesterday, I had a down day and somebody would call me and I said, oh, I'm okay, though. And they said, oh, you're still in grief. I go, well... I mean, you can dismiss it that way, but then you don't look further. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to look into the sacred wound. Okay. This is what I'm going to read, okay?
Sure.
Once upon a time, there was a non-conforming sparrow who decided not to fly south for the winter. However, soon the weather turned so cold that he reluctantly started to fly south, and in a short time, ice began to form on his wings, and he fell to the earth in a barnyard almost frozen. A cow passed by and crapped on the little sparrow. The sparrow thought it was the end, but the manure warmed him and defrosted his wings. Warm and happy and able to breathe, he started to sing. Just then, a large cat came by, and hearing the chirping, investigated the sounds. The cat cleared away the manure, found the chirping bird, and promptly ate him. You know the moral of the story? Number one, everyone who shits on you is not necessarily your enemy. Number two, everyone who gets you out of the shit is not necessarily your friend. And number three, if you're warm and happy in a pile of shit, keep your mouth shut.
That's too much.
Isn't that wonderful?
That
and that's
funny.
What keeps me going right now.
Now, let me get back to the full moon in Pisces.
God! Talk about watch your focus.
Yes. Yes, this is the focus of the show.
The
full moon in Libra or the full moon in Leo or whatever it happens to be. Or how does that compare to the solar return when you come back to your date of birth? When the sun is pretty much exactly the same as it was when you were born.
Well, no, it's not pretty much exactly. I was watching a movie one time, and they said the day comes back, and that's when everybody's going to die because the sun comes back. But the sun comes back at one moment within 48 hours to like 7 Leo 23, the exact, that's your solar return. That has to do with the sun, not the moon. The sun, the sun is the God seed. So the sun, when you throw a solar return chart, that is the way to work with your chart for the year. And you look at the focus of what your horoscope says or your chart. See, for me, astrology is not this predicting thing that's flying around in some glass ball somewhere. It's not this divine. It's a tool. It's a map. It's a map to show you what's going to happen. What to work with. So if you have a Mars Uranus thing in your solar return, you go, a lot of sudden kind of things are going to come up here. A lot of, and I've got to be ready for that. So you are ready. And you say, well, I'm not going to take that personally because I'm supposed to experience this. And experience trumps assumption. And people assume. They assume that when they talk to a drug addict and they say, just quit, you're hurting me, that they're going to do that.
Yeah.
They're not. Now, what you want to know about is a lunar return.
A lunar return.
We get a lunar return every month. See, we only get a solar return once a year.
No, but you only get a full moon in Pisces once a year in September. In September. That's what I'm trying to get at. That there's just one time a year when you get your full moon in your sign, and there is only one time a year when you get the solar return. And it seems to me that could be the beginning of something very auspicious.
But it's not about your divine seed. It's about your emotional environment.
Uh-huh.
Your emotional environment is the only way that you can perceive what your reality is.
Uh-huh.
So the emotional environment is way different. The God seed is about opening the internal door of your heart. It's about breaking open. It's some kind of tragedy usually that it makes it happen. People
mm-hmm.
say, you know, oh my God, I was never the same after that. It's like Elizabeth Lesser's book, Broken Open. It means it takes something like some kind of major thing in your life to break you open. That's when the seed opens. Now, some people don't keep it open. Some people right away, they tape that all up and they shut it off and they don't let it open. But a lunar thing is happening all the time. The moon changes, it goes, it's full right now. And then, by the end of the month, it'll be, almost you can't see it.
Yeah.
It's a changing thing. And so emotionally we look, and so it comes into your sign, a full moon in Pisces or a full moon in Leo or whatever. And it means that's the point where it's going to be most prominent. What's your interpretation of the moon is? Are you a hero or are you a victim?
Mm-hmm.
I just almost croaked when Mel Gibson came out and said now he's going to make this movie about the Jews. You go,
yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, he is really a piece of work.
It sounds like he's calmed down a little bit anyway.
Well, and it'll probably be great. He is a great filmmaker.
Yeah.
I mean, the film he did about Jesus was just unbelievable.
Oh, I refuse to go see that one.
Oh, my God, you have to see that one.
Oh, no,
I mean,
I'm not
he
going.
Did some. He did a scene. He did a scene in there where the cross fell. I'll never get over that. This red cloak flew and the cross fell. And he has some. The whole thing with the snake in the beginning. If you just watch the beginning of it, how the snake is curling around. I mean, it is the most visually imaginative, creative piece I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it's just as good as, The Last Temptation of Christ, which I thought was great, too, okay?
Oh, that was a tremendous film.
That was a tremendous film, and we went to see it in New York outside of the theater, and the nuns were picketing, and I said, stopped, and everybody said, what are you doing? And I said, have you seen the film? And they said, no. I said, then how can you picket? And this one little nun said, what do you mean? I said, you can't picket something you don't know if you have not even seen it.
Yes. What did she say?
Oh, it's against Jesus. I said, how do you know that? Oh, somebody told you, right? Get your mind. Get your own mind. Do your own homework.
Yes.
And rent
and the
movie because you will love the movie, Kate. That's your homework.
Oh, no.
See?
No, that's...
It's
just I'm not going to go see it. It's just not something that appeals to me at all. So,
mm-hmm. No, he made the beautiful movies. What's the great movie that he made? You know, the one where the kid goes in the barn in the beginning and sees all those dead bodies. I mean, there was the movie right there, the metaphor of what this child's life was going to be. There was his astrological chart was right there. And there was a refusal. There's always a refusal by the hero. When he went out with the mentor and learned all that stuff, it was a physical mentor that came in and trained him. And then he went back to live in his village with the girl he loved, and then she got killed. And that was what you call broken open.
Mm-hmm.
That's, there it is. Heroes have these breaking open points.
Mm-hmm.
When they've lost everything. And I had a friend of mine who had this big trial and all this stuff, and she had to move out of her house and give up her house, and now she lives with this other friend, and she's learning gardening and everything. And she said, I had never done this unless I was totally broken open. I was totally flat, you know?
Yes.
So the heroes and stories of survival, it's not about how you lay down, it's how you get up.
Oh, yeah.
It's not what you achieve, it's what you overcome. And Tiger mm-hmm. Woods will rise up, watch him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, and Nadal may win next year over Djokovic. You know what I mean? Because they
mm-hmm.
don't give up, they learn.
Right.
Listen to me tonight. I thought I had nothing to talk about. I can't shut my mouth.
It's wonderful.
I'm so kidding. I wonder what I was going to talk about. I thought I have nothing to talk about. I can't shut up. Okay,
well,
time to shut up.
Not really.
Okay. That phone just bleeped again. I think it's very funny, this whole bleeping thing.
Amazed how Ulysses had a tremendous spark of hyperactivity just during the beginning of the show. That was when
mm-hmm.
he does that, there's always something that he's picking up from from the other side, you know.
Something. Oh, my. Yes. Joanne was petting him.
Yeah, he was just like uncontrollable. I didn't know what to do with him.
mm-hmm.
The older statesman.
Yes. And the other thing that you told me this week that I think I'd like to talk about was how one baby slid out in your arms like so fast. And then another baby you said was lodged where?
Oh, There's babies that do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
This one was lodged in the pelvic bone, and that baby had to come out another way. And and I had to push the baby from below, baby. And I had never done it before, even though I had to pretend I had. The doctor kept saying, harder, push harder. I thought, my God, oh my God. But the baby was born with, I'd have to say, stunned. And needed full resuscitation. And survived very well. So that was a relief. Oh my gosh.
Well, yes, but it's so interesting. You have the thing of witnessing how we come into the world, how we come through the chute, how we come through the nice house thing, and some of the babies, there's a refusal.
Well,
I'm not doing that.
I actually delivered a baby recently. It just flew right out. And that was the ones I referred to as just being so eager to be alive. And all the babies have a tremendous wisdom about them. But the more a person, the more a woman is under all kinds of drugs, let's say, and the more drugs they're on, including induction drugs, the baby, it stresses them out, and it really causes a birth trauma that need not have to happen. So if there's a birth trauma, you know, lots of birth trauma with all these drugs, the baby is not quite as together as, say, a baby that just flies out. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, little Connor over here, the one that was, how many weeks?
Oh, my gosh, 24 weeks. And everybody just said he wasn't going to make it, but that baby made it beautifully. I always knew that baby was going to make it.
Well, they went to New York They were in New York last week, and the babysitter was walking him down the alley, and she said, "Oh, he's really drowsy and all this." And he looked right up at me and gave me this big smile. Like, that's what she thinks.
That's what she thinks, yeah.
So.
Well, let's just make a comment here that the family and Connor wouldn't mind us talking about them. So it's not a breach of confidentiality. They would be happy if we're talking about them.
Yes, they would be happy. And they would sing about it. They would sing about it because they're singers.
Yes, they would. They're singers and beautiful people. And I was just very privileged to meet them there. And then to realize they were your next-door neighbors was the strangest. That was exhilarating, wasn't it?
6 degrees of separation everywhere.
Well, in Lancaster, it's just one. 1 degree. Well, we've reached the end of our beautiful program.
Okay,
and,
thank you, Reverend Glass, for being with us, too.
Yes. And
okay.
She's teaching us that there is no other side.
Yes. Okay, loving. Okay, Kate Loving Shank. Good night.
I love you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Music for mother and child.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I love you.